Our bodies are chemical factories. And we think that, you know, like we take a lot of medications for stress or try to maintain anxiety or things like that. But our bodies also produce the chemicals. And in many times, the chemicals that the doctors are giving them aren't helping because the chemicals that the body is producing. So we control our chemical output by our thoughts.
Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, the podcast dedicated to the fierce yet compassionate lawyers who fight every day for justice in the courtroom. Our guests are top trial lawyers and their firms who share their stories and experiences, offering valuable insights into their journey, as well as expert guests who provide actionable strategies and practical tips for personal injury lawyers looking to optimize their operations, enhance client service, and drive growth in their practices. Trial Lawyer View is brought to you by Synergy. At Synergy, we aren't just a service provider. We are a strategic partner for personal injury law firms, seamlessly integrating with law firms to boost efficiency from day one. Outsourcing cumbersome administrative tasks like lien resolution and Medicare compliance to an expert partner like Synergy enables personal injury firms to focus on what they do best.
Welcome to another episode of Trial Lawyer View, where I'm joined by Pamela Deneuve. Pamela is a seasoned coach and expert dedicated to helping lawyers overcome challenges and rediscover their passion for the law. With over two decades of experience in personal and professional coaching, she's specializing in helping lawyers rediscover their passion for the law and achieve financial success doing what they love. She guides lawyers through career transitions, crises, and burnout, offering personalized solutions for both growth and well-being. Pamela's unique approach integrates physical, mental, and emotional health with professional productivity and financial success, ensuring that lawyers not only achieve their goals, but also thrive in their personal lives. Whether you're facing obstacles in your practice or aiming for the next level of success, Pamela's compassionate coaching empowers her clients to unlock their full potential. In this episode, we discuss cortisol in the morning, how to avoid feeling overwhelmed by structuring your day properly, being healthy with what you feed your mind, and a few other relevant suggestions for dealing with what is a stressful occupation, being a trial lawyer. Welcome to Trial Lawyer View, and thank you for being with me today on the podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So we got connected because you wrote an article titled Why It Was Hard for George to Get Out of Bed and What Changed Everything. I read it and I wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about it, given the significance of the things that you talked about for lawyers and particularly our audience of trial lawyers. So in your article, you mentioned that many lawyers struggle with morning anxiety due to high cortisol levels. How can lawyers manage their cortisol levels to start the day with a sense of calm, especially when they're facing super high stress, particularly trial lawyers who may be going to trial?
Yeah, it's very interesting because it's a natural process that our body secretes cortisol just to kind of give us that jolt to get up in the morning. Of course, many people accentuate that with caffeine, but our bodies... Like, for example, George, in this example, he told me that by the time I get up, by the time I walk to the bathroom, I'm done. I'm in a state. I'm depressed. I'm anxious. Like, I can't, you know, that getting from one place to another, it happens instantaneously. And so the thing that worked with George and works with a lot of my clients, A, is that you have to be aware of what's going on. And cortisol is, you know, like our body secretes, you know, good chemicals and bad and chemicals that make us stress, but oxytocin and all the other things. But when the cortisol makes your brain start to race and starts to project everything that's going to go wrong, all the worry, all the things first thing in the morning hit you like a ton of bricks. And so that by the time you get up in the morning, you're under the, I call it being under the sidewalk. You know, so now you have to try to get, how do I get back up there? So the first thing is, A, you can't hit the snooze alarm. The snooze alarm makes you, if you don't get up, you don't hit the, you have to stay ahead of it. If you don't get up immediately, you'll lay there and you'll allow your brain to take over. So now all of a sudden you're ruminating, you're thinking all the things, and every thought gets you another hit of cortisol. So now it's just a cycle of all these bad things and all these bad feelings. And then now I've got to go into the office with all these things that are going to happen wrong. And I always say worry is thinking about something that may or may not happen, and more than likely probably won't happen. But once we start to worry, then we start to believe what we believe, what our brain is telling us. And then now our body is moving like we have a ton of bricks. The day is already basically ruined or you get off on the wrong foot. So one of the things you have to do is you have to get ahead of it. So one of the things is when the alarm goes off, or preferably if you could get up before the alarm rings, if you get up and then get on a pair of shoes or whatever and just go for that walk to now combat the bad chemicals, now you're getting some endorphins. And it doesn't have to be anything, you know, it doesn't have to be a marathon, or if you're not a runner, just taking that walk first thing combats the chemicals. Our bodies are chemical factories. And we think that, you know, like we take the medications for, like a lot of attorneys take a lot of medications for stress or try to maintain anxiety or things like that. But our bodies also produce the chemicals. And in many times, the chemicals that the doctors are giving them aren't helping, because the chemicals that the body is producing. So we control our chemical output put by our thoughts. And unfortunately, our brains are trained to be in a certain state. So say, for example, like I have a client who is a doctor, and they were always in a state of worry, stress, and all of that, like just constantly having cortisol all day. And I said to them, I said, you know, you're almost like a drug addict. When your cortisol level gets low, your brain is going to give you some more thoughts that are going to increase that level. So going back to George, once he realized that he did not, and some of us don't, I'm one of them, I do not have the luxury to lay around or lollygag around in bed. I must get ahead of my brain. And for me, that has always been, even when I was much younger, have my gym clothes right next to my bed. I don't get a chance to think. I don't get a chance to ruminate. I get out and I move. You know, even today I take Pilates. So I have a Pilates class first thing in the morning. I get up, I put my gym clothes on so I don't get to worry. And so that is the thing, is we can train ourselves not to worry. And we can train ourselves not to worry first thing in the morning. And we have to know that if that's our type, that we are the ones that worry in the morning, we have to kind of beat the clock.
Yeah, so true. And I am one of those people that gets up first thing 6 days a week, and I'm doing some form of exercise. I'm probably a little more fanatical about it than most, but I've found that for me, starting the day off with endorphins, even though like by this time of the day, I am a little tired, admittedly, but you know, at least I've started the day off with that boost, and it really makes a difference in terms of the stress level, because that just melts away everything when you really get a good sweat going. But I'm curious, because you discuss how George's anxiety stemmed from feeling overwhelmed by work, family, external pressures. So what advice do you give lawyers who feel like they're constantly behind or overwhelmed by what's going on in both their professional and personal lives?
Okay, this is a little controversial, but I believe what I call the 4-hour workday. Okay, and so now, you know, lawyers are supposed to work, you know, 12 hours, 10 hours or whatever. But this is what I found the formula that works. It's a training thing. And I actually have a course that I actually teach them is to finish your heavy lifting by 2 o'clock. And it's a combination of, I'm sure you've heard of the Pomodoro method. It's a combination of working. And I say, A, start working before you check your email, before you check your phones, get in the office before the phone starts ringing and get in that 1.5 hour. Just get in that 1.5 hour, time it. And then at, you know, so for example, you get in the office at 8 to 9:30. Now check your email, check your phone, check whatever it is. Give yourself a 30 minutes to do that. And then if you could dive back in, this is called focus work. This is when you have to prepare for depots or you have a brief or a demand. You know, those are like the things that require concentration, and work another 1.5 hours, go to lunch, come back, have another 1.5 hours. And then you have the rest of the day to take calls, talk to clients, have meetings, talk to staff, do all of that. Now you can actually finish by 5, go home and do the same thing. So it's not really a 4.5 hour or 4 hour work day, but it is acting as if I'm going to have a 4 hour work day. I'm going to get all my heavy lifting done by 2. And then I'm going to have the rest of the day for catch up, for client calls, for emails. Because the problem is when you start working and you're interrupted, it's not like you're interrupted for 10 minutes. It can take you up to 1 hour, 45 minutes. Where did I leave off? What did I do? What was I doing? You know, that sort of thing. And then you're interrupted again. There's a saying now with all the social media and all that, that humans do not have the concentration span of a goldfish because we're just, you know, we're doing this all day. And so this is where, you know, you have to almost train your universe. Again, it's kind of like in the morning, training ourselves to get up, like training our universe. When I'm doing my 1.5 hours, no calls, no interruptions, we tell our assistants, paralegal, secretary, 1.5 hours, no interruptions. And then we start training our mind. And the truth is, if you do that, by 2 o'clock, you've accomplished much more than you would have accomplished in a 8 to 10 hour day because of the focus time. So that's how you catch up. You have to be very serious about that.
Yeah, it's hard to, because you got to really guard your time and make sure that if you're going to set aside that time that you really do use it for those purposes. You know, I wanted to ask you about what you feed your mind, because I know you actually mentioned this in the article. And I read a book, and I don't know if you've read it. It's called It Takes What It Takes. It's by Trevor Moad, and he addressed thinking neutrally. And his father was a speaker and commentator on optimism. And he actually decided that he didn't want to go that route because he felt neutrality was really better, not approaching it from either high or low. But anyway, he talked about an experiment he did where he fed his mind nothing but negativity for 30 days. And it triggered him to go into a deep depression. And it was interesting. After I read the book, I really started to control what I allow into my brain. For example, during COVID, I remember I really obsessed over watching what was going on, like a lot of people, but it was so unhealthy. And now I'm very particular about how I get my news. I only read what I want to read, and I pick and choose what I'm going to read about. Anyway, you wrote about George's journey which involve reducing dependence on news and devices to improve mental health well-being. With lawyers, how can they manage the constant just deluge of information, both, you know, what's going on in their practice and externally news, to avoid feeling overburdened or, you know, stressed out?
Well, I'll give you an example. I had a client that came to me, and he's from California, and he says, "Pamela, the reason I came to you was because I couldn't stop watching the news. I couldn't stop scrolling the internet. I couldn't. And I had a deadline, and I knew that I was there were going to be consequences if I didn't meet the deadline, but I couldn't do it. I literally could not stop myself." And, you know, we have to keep in mind that the foe we have, news agencies and internet, they have hired the most brilliant minds to find ways to titillate and addict our brains to getting these hits of endorphins or getting a hit of not cortisol, but getting a hit so that we're addicted to. And that was a very severe case with him, because it did cost him a lot of money. So I come from a family where a lot of the people die in their 40s or 50s because of high blood pressure and heart attacks and all of that. And I was young. I had high blood pressure when I was 16. And I was like, I don't like the way this train is going. And so I became kind of the opposite. I became, you know, fanatic. I became a vegetarian and I worked out and eat very healthy. But over the time, I realized that how I feed my body will affect my health, my vitality, my energy level, and all of that. So I don't play with that anymore. I'm very particular about that. And I'm not saying I'm perfect. So people, once they understand, and I work with my clients, what you feed your brain is as important, and in some cases, even more important than what you eat. Because without mental health, without emotional health, you have nothing. You can have money, you can have a law practice, but if you don't have mental health, if you don't have emotional health, many of my clients, like I'm trying to figure out, I don't have the courage, but I'm thinking about ending it all. I think in the report, they were saying they did a poll of attorneys, and 11% had suicidal ideations. So I thought about that. I said, okay, that means 11 people out of 100 thought about ending their life. Now, let's say there are 400, let's say 400 lawyers, 500 lawyers are in a line. 55 of them have thought about ending their lives. This is serious. It's not like, oh, okay. You know, and we hear of these cases where some make, you know, actually do it. I actually talked with someone who survived it, you know, really the gun didn't go off or whatever. But anyway, it's not like, oh, it's a good idea to feed our minds good things. It is imperative. So what do I do? Okay. It's 'cause I do what I preach. So I have a playlist on YouTube, meditations and inspirational talks and people from back in the 20s, like, you know, and wealth consciousness and all of that. And I have that. I have earphones. I have them by bed. I usually wake up. I don't get up till 6:30, but I get up at wake up use for whatever reason at 4. I get up, I put my earphones on, I put the positive message on, and I go back to sleep. So I'm getting positive messages when I get up. And then I get up and I put on my gym clothes, and I'm still listening to positive messages. And so now I've exercised, I got a good start on my day. And when my clients do that, they have a good start on their day. But unfortunately, get up, check the device, check the email, you know, worry about everything that's happened. Now, trudging through the day, And I've had some clients that were like in serious crisis, like serious crisis where the anxiety, they were unable to function. And we were able to practice these things. And, you know, and a lot of the clients, like I'd have them text me in the morning. Okay, tell me that you're on the road, that you're walking, holding them accountable. Tell me that you're walking. I had a meditation and one gentleman, he was a Catholic. He says, I found doing the rosary. I'd walk and I'd do the rosary. Whatever you need to do. It's not, you know, one size fits all, but the concept of making sure to know that the news makes money by how upset you get. So their job is to make you upset so that you keep watching it and they make more money by the degree of upset. So we have to say, okay, I'm not going to buy into their system of, you know, being upset and ruining my whole life. Like they're making millions and I'm broke because I can't get out this demand.
And social media too, because the algorithms, you know, support that polarization. And so it's a really vicious cycle. And you talk about helping lawyers stop comparing themselves to others and reclaim their relationships. Why is that such a key part of restoring energy and focus for your clients you work with?
We are social beings. I want to say social animals. I mean, we are social. And I've seen both sides of it. I've seen the attorneys who isolate. And it's not a pretty picture because, A, the nature of practicing law is very stressful and a lot of demands and all of that. And so if you don't have that kind of socialization of family or friends or whatever, then this takes over. And there's a saying, don't go into your brain alone because it's like going into a bad neighborhood alone. So you go in there and it has nothing good to tell you. It has nothing good to tell you. And so there's a study that they said, well, why do people remember bad memories more than their good memories? And they said, because the amount of space in our brain to store bad memories is so much larger that it crowds out the good memory, the room for the good memories. So we can always restore the bad memory, you know, always recall the bad memories, or we gravitate like a moth to the flame to things that are upsetting or things that cause us to put cortisol in our body or to be stressed or things like that. And so the client that was so addicted to listening to the news and all of that, they get in so much pain that they will listen. They get in so much pain. It's like, what are my choices? I've got to change what I'm doing because I got a family to feed. I've got a law practice to run. I have all of this, and I can't allow this turmoil, which is really just being in turmoil all day. And then, you know, social media and news and all of those things. I mean, we're like a birthday candle in the north wind when we put ourselves in the social media, because they have hired the best brains to figure out how to keep us on that app once we go in there.
100%. In your experience, what are the most common self-sabotaging behaviors you see in lawyers, and what practical steps can they take to overcome the habits to improve not only their mental health, but physical health as well?
So the biggest problem is denial and pride. And, you know, attorneys have been so indoctrinated. You can't be weak. You can't need help. You can't not be able to handle this yourself. You know, so the biggest problem is the denial that they're, you know, when they did the study, you know, 28% were depressed. But what percentage will admit it? So, and the thing is that it won't go away. you know, unless you would really address it, it only continues. It only gets worse. So the biggest thing is the denial and to continue to push oneself. The second thing is to allow oneself to be distracted and to just accept the depression as the way it is and, you know, throw alcohol at it. You know, the large percentage of attorneys are problem drinkers. So the throwing the drinks at it. Now, many attorneys, they go to psychiatrists so that they can get medication so they can be calmer. But now they're throwing alcohol on top of the medications. The other thing is that they alienate their families. I believe in a holistic. If the family is terrible, then the law practice is going to be terrible. If the law practice is terrible, the family is going to be terrible. And so I think a lot of times, you know, when we talk about well-being and family balance, you know, a lot of attorneys mock that. They like, well, you know, I've been married for it's just a bad marriage, or I'm unhappy in my marriage and there's nothing that can be done about it. Or, you know, I come home, I take a couple of drinks, I watch TV, I check my device, and then I go to bed and then I do the same thing again. And meanwhile, kids are strangers, wife are strangers, no vacations, no time. And so then it starts to deteriorate. And there's no socialization, which is a very big part. And in every case with my clients, once they have that date night with their wives, you know, let's go on that date night. And I hold them accountable. You know, let's get home. We're not going to just work on practice. We're going to work on your health, mental, physical, and emotional. We're going to work on your law practice and the viability of it, in making sure that you're billing and you're getting out there. And I actually have a way that they keep track of their billing so they're not at the end of the month scrambling around trying to bill. And then now your family. Now let's have harmony at home. And invariably, when that happens, guess what? The law practice starts to prosper. The mental and emotional health. Depression and anxiety and all of that is a very lonely, self-contained space where they're in their head, here, me, myself, and I, me, excluding everybody else. And this gets so big that no purpose, they lose purpose. Like, this is my purpose in life, you know, that I felt passionate about one day. This was the law, the practice of the law, the higher calling. This was the woman that I fell in love with. These are the beautiful kids that I have. Like, all that disappears. And it's just, you know, I'm having a terrible time. I can't function. And everything goes to pot, including paperwork. I really believe the whole thing. Okay, I've had clients. They're so far behind and everything is just, you know, they don't even know what's over there. It's like a boogeyman over there. Like what is going to be there? I have a deadline. I don't even know that's there. So it's like, okay, let's go in on a Saturday. You can bring your kids, you can bring whatever, and you all are going to organize your office this day. And just doing that, like, oh, just takes like a load off their shoulders to actually know what's in their office. So it's these little things that all tie in. And, you know, because what happens is, you know, like lawyers will take courses. Okay, now the problem is marketing, you know, and which, you know, okay, we're going to market. And then, oh, the problem is, you know, this, or, you know, you need to take this CLE or whatever. But it all has to work together. It's not individuals that if I get my law practice going and then my family is a mess, or if I get my law practice going and everything's disorganized, if I get my law practice going and I'm eating crap or drinking too much, it's all connected. And that's the important thing.
So when a lawyer comes to you for help, what is your process to get them to go from survival mode to really a fulfilling life and law practice?
Okay. So attorneys come to me and they're just kind of surprised at the process. Okay. So I believe that most of our coping skills and our decision-making skills were developed before the age of 7. And science shows that our primary decisions about whether we're smart or whether we're this or whether that, that was established at a young age. And but it's subconscious. We don't know what that is. So the first thing I want to do is I want to know, what is your primary coping mechanism that works good when it works good, but it's a blind spot? When does it work bad? Let's find out what that is. And so I have them draw the floor plan of the first house they lived in before the age of 7. And we walk through the house and we see, you know, what happened at the dinner table or what was going on? How did you adapt? What did you do? It tell you, it's really like a microcosm of what they're going through today. Because if you find it, you'll find that it's still happening 20, 30 years later.
I just walked mentally through my house. Sorry, my mind wandered there a bit because when you said that, I was like, Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
So once we find that, I call it a basic operating principle, which is a coping mechanism we develop before the age of 7 that never goes away. We did it subconsciously, and it's a knee-jerk response to what's going on today. And so therefore, once we find that, then we can say, okay, how does this apply to what's going on in your life today? Because you'll have a blueprint. It'll be like, oh, this is what's the same thing's happening in my law practice. Oh, this is the same thing that's happening in my family. This is the same thing. So once a person is aware of it, then, oh, now I have a choice. So now we can create a strategy and an action plan to counter attack that thing, whatever that is, that has the person stuck. So it's a very, 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 very holistic thing. I'm trying to think of an example, but I was thinking of one of my clients that was a youngest child, and nobody ever really listened to him. And, you know, he was always discounted and told that he wasn't smart and all of that. And so there he was having that same thing in the firm. He goes in, he's late, he's, you know, looked down, you know, he created the same scenario of being the person that was looked down to at his firm. Same situation that he was looked down to at home, you know, with his daughter, with his family, with all of that. And so it was really a matter of, oh, that was just an idea. You know, you can do things. You can do things like be a great lawyer. You can be enthused about your life. You can have respect of your family. You can do all those things. So it's like, it's really, we're reenacting a play that started when we were 7. So that's what I do.
Final question before I let you go, and you've been very generous with your time. For any of our listeners who feel like they're too far gone or too stuck to change, what would you say to them?
Well, I think the first thing, and I know that is the same for me, is you've got to be honest with yourself. It's so easy to minimize the impact of what's going on. And I always say, if you were like, this is my birth and this is the end of my life. If I was to take a helicopter up right now and look down at my life, what would I see? And if this continues, that's going on right now, how is that going to extrapolate the rest of my life if I don't change? So that's the first thing, because once we can tell ourselves the truth, then we can motivate ourselves. Am I drinking to mask all the pain and discomfort I have with my wife, my kids, my law practice, my aging parents, or whatever it is? And then if I continue on this path, where am I going to be next year, year after, 5 years, if I don't do something about that? Or if I'm so far behind in my law practice where, you know, I'm, you know, I could be malpractice. I'm always fighting. Am I missing a deadline or whatever? What's going to happen if I don't change what I'm doing right now? And generally, unfortunately, the clients that come to me, a lot of them wait really late. And we still turn them up because it's like, I remember I had a lawyer, he was in, I think, Utah or something. And he called me and he says, well, do you take insurance? No, I don't take insurance. Okay. 6 months later, he called me again. And then finally, it just got where here it was. He was trying to become an equity partner. He wasn't being recognized. He was having problems at home. He had been an athlete in college and law school. So he was like overweight and all these things. And then he finally like, I have to talk to you. I can't keep going this way. So it's not the first thing an attorney will do. It's more the okay. You know, it's just like a person waits until they have a really bad cavity where they can't sleep at night. Now I'll go to the dentist. It's kind of like that. But, you know, every one of clients that I work with, they get their life back. They get their law practice back. They get their health back. They get their marriage back. I had a client and he worked with me for a few years and he says, Pamela, when I talk to my daughter, I thank you, because his wife was very domineering and he didn't feel like he was this or that. And I said, go visit your daughter. She was grown by this. She was out of college. You need to have a relationship with your daughter. Your relationship is with your wife, and your wife had a relationship with your daughter, but you don't have a relationship with his daughter. So they went up and they went to see the Northern Lights together. And he's just like, oh my God, you know, I would have missed this. So, you know, people get their lives back when you have someone objective, someone who's worked with lawyers for over 30 years, who's seen everything and everything, you know, like there's no shame. There's no shame. There's no blame. There's no embarrassment. Like, okay, here's what it is. I have not been able to overcome this myself. Okay, I'm going to do this. Just one last thing. I have a client and she has a marriage, is 29 years old. She came to me for her law practice. What should I do in law practice? But, you know, when you're doing it from the holistic, like she had a marriage, she's been in a marriage for 29 years that's totally falling apart. So, we're going to go over here and work at your law practice when the most important thing in your life is falling apart, you know? And so she's really actively, really, you know, like we believe that she can salvage it. And then once we get that, now let's see what we want to do with the law practice, because this is like a SOS. So when you have someone who handles practicing law and strategy from a holistic point of view, to look at every aspect and have it all work together, then that's where the healing, not just, I'm going to put a Band-Aid over here, or I'm going to tell you, don't have enough discipline, or I'm going to tell you, you know, you need to do 10 push-ups over here, or all that. It all has to work as a concerted effort.
Great stuff, Pamela. If anyone listening to today's podcast wants to get in touch with you, wants to work with you, has questions about anything you talked about today, what's the best way to reach you?
Well, they can reach me at Pamela@PamelaDeneuve.com, which is a hard spelling, but Pamela, and my last name is D like David, E, N like Nancy, E, U, V like Victor, E, Pamela@PamelaDeneuve.com. And also, if you look me up on LinkedIn, you can DM me, and that might be an easier way too.
Well, Pamela, thank you very much for your time today and for joining me on the podcast. And we'll see everybody on the next episode of Trial Lawyer View.
Okay, Jason, thank you so much for having me. And this is my life's, as you can see, I'm very passionate about it. This is my life's work. And so I always look forward to an opportunity to share my experiences.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Here is another episode of Trial Lawyer View. We hope you enjoy today's guest and discussion. Tune in to our next episode for more helpful insights from fellow trial lawyers and practice experts. This podcast is brought to you by Synergy. Visit partnerwithsynergy.com to learn more about how Synergy can free your firm to focus on what it does best.